If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Hello.
This is Bob's wonderful intro into our This Life podcast.
He is a professional.
So yeah, today we have a full house.
We do.
Yeah. Sharon has stayed with us, which is our custom. We sometimes bring guests over. And you've got a show coming up.
I have a well,
can we'll you talk
see.
About it?
Hi. Yes. My deal came through today for a Showtime limited series starring Annette Bening called Universal and Triumphant.
Fantastic.
And
it
is about a cult group. It is about a family of four children who grew up with a mother who was literally God.
To the kids.
It's the story of the children, yeah. It's and their relationship to a woman who was believed by 200,000 people to be
God
herself, and it's very unusual that
look at Drew's eyes right now.
He wants to join.
Fascinating how people do that, number one, but number two, it's an interesting corollary to what we were talking about last week with you and Prince, who a lot of people sort of treated as though he were God. Yeah,
yes, and it's not that different. It's intended to be an anthology about cult groups, which in my studies can go from like four people to
two. You can have a cult of two. Like a lot of domestic violence relationships are coercive, cultish kinds of things where people get brainwashed.
That's true. That's really true.
Yeah. But certainly 4, 6, 8, you know, gets more traditionally cultish.
This particular book, the show is from a book called Prophet's Daughter, which was written by the eldest daughter who was the woman who was supposed to take over Elizabeth's position, and they at one point they
you take over God's spot.
Yeah,
I want that job.
Like Jesus,
does it get handed down?
Other voice. Let me choose the other voice. That is Amber Tozer.
Oh, sorry.
She has a book called Sober Stick Figure. She's a comedy writer, and she is sober.
Yeah,
and she's starting a cult.
Yeah,
called Amberism.
That'd be really nice, though.
Wouldn't it be good?
I would let them boss me around, though. I'd be like the first cult leader who would like.
But Sharon was
like,
explaining it to me. She was explaining it to me a couple of months ago, and I was like, I want to form a cult. That's when we had that long conversation. She was kind of giving me the nuts and bolts of how to do it.
I'm for it, 100%.
How do you do it?
You write a big book. You write a book. Right, it doesn't have
She's
to be good.
Done.
Amber's
right
got that.
This the, here,
done.
Right here.
Okay,
like it needs to be a little thicker, like more like Book of Mormon. You know, you have dictated to you by an
God.
Angel or
you,
God.
You did some answers in
you
there.
Need God, right. It could be an angel, and then you tell everyone that that is the word, and you are the person who got it, and you're the only person who's got the direct connection, and everyone believes you.
Okay.
And
I'll do it next year.
It's that simple, Jim.
Yeah.
So
I said, telling you,
can do it.
What about a Bob Drew?
She's thinking about
can
it very
second
always,
in command
always business
to
ideas,
the messenger.
One.
What's that?
You can be the messenger. I'll be the second in command guy, just like in real life.
Yeah, I think I just heard something. I think somebody just spoke to me.
What is
it? I got it.
This is the bureau right here.
Yeah, this is where it all began. And someday they'll study this room and talk about this room and where it all began, like L. Ron Hubbard.
Hey, lived in this neighborhood, by the way, at one time.
He did?
Yes.
Oh, that's very right. Briefly. When he was
a writer. He was a writer.
When he was a demon worshiper.
Yeah,
JPL with, you know about that, right?
A little bit.
With Parsons, this guy Jack Parsons. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So there's been cults around forever. None of them have ever, now here's an interesting thing about cults, and we talked about this. The Manson family is a very small cult. There's only like 40 followers. It's the most famous cult in history. There are cults that have millions of followers, Drew.
That we've never heard of.
That we've never heard of.
I know.
Crazy.
I know, it's weird.
So she's doing a TV show about it. It's going to be great.
No, cults scare the hell out of me. They generally, the fact that people will do, Mike Carano, remember who we interviewed here, I don't know what episode it is, Nate, maybe you know, he was raised in a cult.
Oh yeah, he was talking about that.
Yeah.
You know him, he's a comedian.
Mike, you know Carano, Mike Carano.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was raised in a cult.
Really?
Yeah.
What was the
explains
core
a lot,
belief?
Doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're Facebook friends. I'm like, I'm never talking to that guy. No, just kidding. What was their core belief? What was do you remember?
It wasn't it wasn't a sex one. Most of them, a lot of times, they always end up with sex or
always.
Sex, right?
Oh yeah,
sex.
Yeah. The leader always. Having sex Synanon. With girls.
Synanon.
Somebody's doing a show right now on HBO. About
what's that?
Synanon.
What is that?
That was a drug program where they put the snake in the mailbox to try to kill the guy
No. That's Narcanon.
Oh no, Synanon.
Synanon was the group. They were offshoot of AA. They were all heroin addicts. They're jazz musicians.
In Venice. They were in Venice.
And they started this, they all were in the Pritikin building, which is now a hotel.
Yeah.
And they broke off and formed
a cult
that was
very profitable.
Quite profitable, getting people off of junk. But they, it became more and more of a, you know, single personality led messianic cult group, and it became, they had this thing called The Game, which I played The Game once. I went down to Synanon.
You went down there and did it?
Yeah.
And what is it? What happened?
Wait, were you doing it for out of curiosity, or were you like seeking? Did you want to
do it? Yeah, well, when I was young, we would just go to Venice Beach and do whatever the fuck, you know?
Yeah.
It's like cool. And it was considered to be, you know, on the real psychological cutting edge.
And so what was The Game?
The Game was where you spoke with ostensible complete honesty and revealed your true self.
Yeah.
But you had a board that had a list of emotions. So you'd have to say, I'm feeling... And then go up and look up at the board.
Oh, these guys. These guys.
You have to be honest, but it's with codified. What we write for you.
Yeah,
but
you have to be honest, but our way.
These are the guys that eventually made Est and Lifespring and all that stuff, right?
Yeah, Landmark Forum, all that.
They started with the Synanon stuff.
No, the Synanon thing is a separate thing, but it is. But it all comes out of the same the same basic, yes.
Which is this weird... sort of
get to the truth thing.
Yeah, but it's a distortion of psychological ideas in a group setting where they make people have these intense experiences that are based on psychological principles, and the conceit is that if you discharge these emotions they'll disappear instead of re-traumatize you, which is really what happens, right?
It's very similar to
that was the 70s. 70s
now everybody's going, now everyone takes ayahuasca.
Oh god, do you hear where this is going?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Have you done it yet?
No,
it's going to hurt.
I didn't hear about it until I already got sober.
Yeah,
so
now a lot of sober people are doing it.
Really?
It's not a drug.
That's the last thing we need, right? Oh. If they don't end up on pain meds for hurting their shoulder, they're going to now take this spiritual thing.
Is
people
it addictive?
Are going down to Mexico. No, it's like a hallucinogen.
Only if you do it all the time.
Yeah.
I
probably not,
it
but, it might trigger something. You know, you don't know. We don't know it could trigger something. But I'm not really worried about it being addictive. I'm worried about people hurting themselves.
Well, I have a question for you that's come up quite
before
frequently.
You ask it, before you ask it, I would just say these are the same people that won't let their kids play football because they might get a head injury. They're whacking themselves over the head with this stuff 40 times harder than a concussion you're going to get playing football.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
Well, let me ask
you
this.
Don't
you
remember all the people who used to see it last season?
I'm not into it. I just like to watch. I'm like Chauncey Gardner. I hear all this stuff. I listen. I'm interested in things. But they're asking me if they're still sober. I say yes.
I'd say yes, too.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Look at her.
Not Amber.
Did you see me?
Wait, what about alcoholic? What about ecstasy?
Well, no, ecstasy.
No,
ecstasy.
No.
So it's a head.
The way I use logic to reason everything out, right? Bill Wilson took 50.
It's acid.
Times he took acid. He did LSD under doctor's care.
Ooh.
in those original Hoffman type things, yeah. right? He still considered himself sober. I believe somebody that goes to Costa Rica or Mexico to have one of these one-time
experiences. They don't have to do it here. This is happening in West Los Angeles all the time now.
No.
They're doing it here.
The people
yes.
I know go to...
They're doing it here now. I'm telling you, they're doing it here.
It's probably really expensive.
Yeah.
Chelsea Handler did it on her show.
I saw
my God.
Yeah, yeah.
That was actually what intrigued me.
Well, here's what intrigued me about that is they went through all this stuff to get it. One, there were three of them. Chelsea had no experience. The one girl, Jenny Mullins, had kind of a positive experience. The guy had a worst experience of his life. So 66% of the people had nothing or a horrible experience, and they injured themselves in the process. Why do that?
Because you know why? Because the one out of three that has a great experience goes running around AA telling everybody.
I understand
Chelsea
that.
Chelsea did it again, though.
That was for TV. You could tell that was a
really?
TV movie.
It's
yeah.
totally true. I totally bought it.
Well, think about that, Drew.
She had producers going, it was good. It was good, right? It was good. You had a great experience. You could tell.
Well,
there,
I saw
she was
her crying and like thinking about her sister.
I'm such a sucker.
Well, she did it a second time, and she's had this epiphany.
Maybe.
That she was
Maybe.
Mean to her sister.
She's mean to everybody.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
Was that an epiphany for her?
It was like you picked one person.
And it's the same question I have to everybody. How does it change your life? Tell me exactly how your life's different now. Well, I just see things. You know, that's your amygdala firing off differently. Was it worth having your amygdala fire a little more so colors are a little brighter and stuff? That you injured yourself? It's worth it? Your brain is a perfect instrument. It's perfect. You fuck with it in ways that can injure it. You're just asking for trouble. You and I have had this long conversation with Duncan Trussell. Right,
yeah.
And you know I'm open to this stuff. I'm very open to the ideas of it. I just worry that to what are you doing? Duncan makes sense to me because he knows what he's doing. He knows why he's doing it. He has purposefulness behind it. He's thoughtful. He's using it. Okay, it's worth the risk for him, right? For the average person, they don't know what the hell they're doing. They don't know why they're doing it.
Yeah, and but I think everyone family. Just wants a quick fix. They want like a quick answer. It's the same, I think, as like doing heroin or anything else, especially if you're like seeking an experience. But I think
all right, Amber, what's your story? Where was the trauma?
What?
Come on now. Come on.
What specifically?
I don't know.
Who didn't treat you right early on in life?
Oh,
that's
God.
Where we're going to right here.
Oh, God.
I just need to go like page 28. Start at page 28 and I'll find
yeah,
it.
Yeah, read a sentence and then I'll riff off of it. I don't know. Well... It's just weird because we just changed the topic so
I did
quickly.
I did. It's the way we do
Well, no, it's people seeking. See, what they're seeking, what people are seeking is that you said a quick fix. They're trying to seek a quick fix on all these.
Relief.
Like all these markers that are in their psyche from trauma, right? And they play out. And you got to, what I've learned I have to do is just watch how they play out in my perception of things. In what I like, what I gravitate towards, rather than keep thinking it's something that's either behind me and doesn't affect me in any way, or it's something I need to be more spiritual and eat better and do yoga and meditate more so I can get rid of this empty feeling or work the steps,
right?
You know what I mean? Or do this or do that excessively. It's more to just see and connect the dots of how your trauma and childhood actually is you and how it actuates in the relationships you have and how you see the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm antisocial. I'm very aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I try to do the right thing. Though I talked on the telephone for 1 hour
today,
all the way driving here.
I know it was good.
No ticket.
I know it's good.
But if I got a ticket, we talked about this a couple of shows ago. I get pulled over sometimes and they go, if it's somebody that watched Celebrity Rehab, they go, hey, are you the Dr. Drew guy? And I go, I sure the hell am, if it means anything to you.
Did they not give you
a
ticket?
Two times they have not given me a ticket.
Man.
So then I tell Drew the story and he goes, he starts getting really quiet. He never gets a ticket because he's Dr. Drew.
No, I get him. No, I get him, but I feel guilty. You feel triumphant. I feel guilty.
He feels triumphant when he doesn't get
it. Can you imagine
that's
a
what
cop
I'm saying.
Giving Dr.
Feel
Drew
I feel
a
terrible.
Ticket? That's never going to happen. How many times you gotten off?
Off?
Yeah.
Probably about four.
How many times you gotten off?
Speeding?
Hey, by the way, speeding.
One fucking time.
One time, by the way, when I was not knee, it was Adam Carolla.
Oh, that'll get you off.
Yeah, guy with a big, huge Highway Patrolman standing over me. I was like, I don't even know, but whatever you got to do, man. And he goes, yeah, you're going to E4. He goes, you know, and when we have our yearly events, Adam Carolla comes up and makes us happy for a couple hours. And I really like him. And I'm thinking, oh my God, he's going to let me off. I can't believe it.
Benefit show for the police athletic league.
And he goes, I really appreciate if you slow down. I'm like, oh my God, I love you.
Really appreciate it.
Then I feel like guilt and shit for the next 3 days. And I go 54 miles an hour.
So you are a Jew.
Oh, yes. So, Amber, so can you talk about it? You don't have to talk
what,
about
my
it.
Trauma? No.
Yeah.
I grew up in Pueblo, Colorado. Mm-hmm. There's the trauma.
So you were hip, you know, knew what was going on in the world, and you're trapped in Pueblo, Colorado. Right?
Yeah. No, I mean, I was there from 0 to 21.
I know. So when you were 14, you heard what band or read what book?
Aerosmith. I loved Aerosmith. I was a big, like, Chicago, like, sports. I was a tomboy, so I was into sports. And, you know, Madonna. I loved Madonna. I was loving your Madonna stories. I don't know. I was just sort of, it's sort of a lower middle class, mid-sized city, and my parents owned a restaurant, and I guess...
Bar or restaurant?
Bar. It started off as a bar.
Uh-huh.
And then my mom...
Added food.
She was like, let's use this kitchen. I loved it. I loved having a bar. When my parents were my biological father. They were married from when I was born, and they got a divorce when I was 9, but those, like... It started off as a really divey bar, and then my mom came up with this pizza recipe, and I got super, super busy. So it sort of, she's sort of a badass, but I don't know, it just became this really popular restaurant, but I was always surrounded by boozers, and my dad was a closeted alcoholic. He never came out of his bedroom, and my mom started to run the business, and he became more and more.
Are they fighting?
Not really. Like, there was just, like, a lot of silence. But anger. I sort of liked it when they were fighting because I got information about what was going on because I had no idea. I just knew that my dad was super messed up and my mom was a workaholic. So she started, they started sleeping in separate rooms. And whenever they were arguing, I was like, yes. And I would listen just so I could understand what the hell the problem was, because he was just
what happened with him.
Well, he, when I was 3, he was an alcoholic, but he was a binge drinker, so he'd go on dry spells, and my mom told me this later, but he would drink and then go on dry spells. But when I was 3, he was in a car accident, and he was drunk, and the other driver was drunk. So it was like, and it was the 70s. So
break even, no ticket.
They were patting on the back. You guys get yourself home. You boys go on home.
I was probably in the back seat with a
seatbelt.
No seatbelt or car seat. I don't know, but
car seat in the 70s.
Oh yeah. So I don't know. He was in a body cast, and after that, for a bit. So he spun into like a serious depression after that. And I didn't know all this when I was like, I was too young to remember. But all I remember is him being just never coming out of his bedroom. And when he did, he was really grumpy. Oh. And I hated him. I hated him so much.
Oh, there you go.
So there you go.
Yeah.
There's...
So yeah, a lot of successful relationships after that.
Oh my God. It's been horrible. It's been so bad, but I'm really good at being single, and I'm happy being single. I went to lunch. Do you guys know Paul Gilmartin? He does the mental illness happy hour podcast.
Yes, I do. I did that.
Yeah.
I think Paul's been on my podcast.
Probably. Yeah. You guys are probably.
Yeah, he's funny. He does
he's
it out
great.
In the, out in the valley, right off of Van Nuys Boulevard.
Yeah. I did his podcast 2 years ago, but I just had coffee with him last week, and he's telling me, he's like, you're a love anorexic, and, or what is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Love anorexic. Yeah. And
what is
wow,
well, that's some LA psychobabble right there.
Well, no,
isn't it? Sharon, come on.
It's really more in the context of sex. Is that you can be a sex addict, and then you can be bipolar with sex, or you can be anorectic to sex.
And, oh yeah, sex anorexia.
Is that what used to be, frigid?
Yeah.
Frigid.
A cold bitch. A cold bitch.
Awesome.
What? No. No, we're fine.
But that's what I don't want to be labeled anything. I'm like, is there a group of people where it's like you're okay
who don't
being
have
single
sex and don't have relationships?
No, I like sex and stuff, but it's like I don't care. I am honestly happy single. And he was trying to talk me into being like, you have a fear of commitment. I was like, I don't care if I have a fear of commitment. I honestly, I don't give a shit. I don't, I'm happy. Like,
that's acceptance.
Do you get into that in the book? Sober stick figure? Sober stick figure, yeah.
Well, there's a thing where I'm like, I write where I think I'm going to meet my soulmate or whatever when I'm 60. Like, I truly
believe.
Well,
that's interesting.
That you still have like 30 years. Yeah. That's so long.
Yeah. I know someone who just did that.
Like, like, why not? Why
it
do
could
I
be a
have
she,
to?
Too.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, nah,
what? Just because I'm wearing, like, a flannel, you think I'm gay? Just, no, I am 30% gay. I'm wearing flannel.
I'm saying that
I'm you're a Birkenstock, you. Dog, are you?
Your top review is from Tignataro.
Oh.
I'm not saying because you. I'm saying because a lot of women, you mentioned that age group, a lot of women find other women in their 60s.
Oh, yeah. I'm almost 40, and a lot of my friends are like starting to date women just because they feel
they're
like
better.
They have no choice.
No, you have a whole, Susan has a whole theory about this. Can you give her a mic?
Oh, yeah. Quick? What you got?
I'm back. Well, the hormones change when you go into your 40s, and you are less into having sex with men, and a lot of women like leave their husbands.
Well, you said you're less into reproducing that.
Right, you don't reproduce anymore. I found that when I was trying to reproduce, I wanted to have more sex. And then after I realized I didn't have to reproduce anymore, I didn't really want to have sex anymore. And then I noticed that a lot of women in their 40s leave their husbands, and then they have like mates. They move out with their girlfriends, and then they become
because
like the Golden Girls.
There's more
with
intimacy.
No sex.
There's more intimacy.
Yeah, it's more intimate. I don't know. I just noticed that, and I was like, well, and then, you know, I found at my age, I have a lot more women hitting on me than I did when I was younger. It's really weird.
Wow.
But then you added testosterone back, and it
yeah. So now I'm more like a guy. So my girlfriends want me more. But then, yeah, I get hit on by more of my girlfriends than guys. But
so
also
during your reproductive phase, you wanted specifically.
I wanted to have sex a lot.
Cock. Well, that's like biological.
Definitely cock. Yeah. Right, whatever like would get science. Me pregnant.
You said I could say
yeah,
cock.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, final, I do final. Now. I can't
wait till I'm super ugly, and I honestly cannot wait till it's not even an option.
What like, is that sex?
Well, yeah.
That's.
Honestly.
That's hormonal, I think. I mean, and also, you know what? Not all women want to have sex all the time. Men don't understand that. Men don't understand that women don't care if they have sex all the time. Like it's. I mean, when I was
didn't understand that.
When I was
not really
boys don't
reintroduced to hormones, and I became a man. I have more testosterone than Drew now.
How dare you?
You can tell by my low voice. I used to be a soprano, by the way, and I just, you know, I have a drive that I see that men have, like, on a different level. So, but women, as a woman, I was like, well, I could take it or leave it. I was like, yeah, whatever. But unfortunately, I was married to Drew, his very passionate man, and I had to step up.
And right?
Bring it. So anyways.
All right, we got
no,
it.
But I see what you're saying, that, you know, you just would, like be chained to your libido is really, you know.
Plato, one of the Platonic, Socratic what do they call them? The chapters. Uh-huh. He's interviewing an old man, and he goes, "What's it, Socrates? What's it like being old?" And the guy goes, "Well, you know, first of all, you have more money, so it's good, and you're not driven by sex anymore, and that's really a relief. And that's what's good about being old." This guy tells Plato.
You don't have to get it up anymore.
Yeah. Well, you're not interested. You're not driven. You're not preoccupied.
Well, yeah, yeah. Because it's all you guys think about. Like, I've talked to guys, and they say they can't. They don't like men in their late. My friends are in their late 30s. I talked to a friend of mine. He's like, I can't. He goes, I want it to go away. He was in a loving relationship with a girl, and he had this example. He's like, I love my girlfriend. I'm in love with her. He said, I see this woman on the street. She's not that great looking. She's sort of medium. And my first thought was like, yeah, I'd have sex with her. And then he was like mad at himself. He's like, why did I have to think that?
Is that Fred Stoller? Did Fred actually say that?
No. Fred would never have that self-awareness about him.
Amber and Fred are big buddies.
Oh, yeah.
When you were in your addiction, were you very sexual?
I I was pretty promiscuous, but I would seriously, I wouldn't go all the way. I would blue ball guys all the time because I was raised Catholic.
Is that a Colorado thing?
No, I think it was a Catholic thing. I always felt so guilty about sex, so I would go and fool around and then blue ball them and be like, laters. But then I was in a relationship for 4 years, and I was pretty faithful. Like, we... Practically pretty faithful.
Sorta.
That's a new term.
I made out with the guys at bars while we were still at the, but we were breaking up all the time. So it was those like 4 years of on and off. So whenever we would.
Was that here in LA? You seem to jump around a lot. I'm looking at New York, Victoria, Queens. You like to get around.
Yeah. Well, I moved to New York when I was 21, just like.
To do stand up?
No. Well, no. Oh, do we have to stop?
No.
Listening.
What do you do? She's signaling to you. It's a producer signaling. Let's take a break.
I have to take a break. Be right back.
All conversations and information exchanged during participation in the This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob Forrest podcast or interaction with drdrew.com website is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction per se. Nothing on these podcasts or posted on this site supplements or supersedes the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the sites or podcasts.
Welcome back. Watch this. We're back.
We're back. Welcome back to This Life. Bob is actually with us now. He's no longer driving,
I'm here,
which is
I'm
great.
Here.
Sharon has kindly stayed with us.
Looking through this book.
And we got, of course, Amber with us. The Sober Stick Figure is out, I'm assuming, iTunes?
May 31st.
May 31st. Okay, so you can
Dr. Drew.
Right. You can find This Life. We have thislifepodcast.com, right?
Yes.
We have thislifepodcast.com. We have drdrew.com website, Amber?
AmberTozer.com.
Tozer, T-O-Z-E-R.
We're soon going to have Dr. Drew rehab review. Dr. Drew and Adam are
5 minutes. Yes, please. Do me a favor, those of you This Life listeners. I stopped doing Loveline this week after 30 plus years. Well, 33 years. Or a few weeks ago. And Adam Kroll and I jacked up our podcast to daily. So he and I are doing 5 days a week. So check out the Adam and Dr. Drew show. And he and I have sort of found our stride again. It took about 3 or 4 days when Adam was like caustic and acerbic and irritable and angry. Did you listen, Nate, to some of that?
Isn't that what works?
No, he's got we have a rhythm that we get back into. And I was aware of it by day six that we were back in it. And it's a certain thing. And it's focusing on other people, frankly, that really gets us out of his anger and irritability. And I like talking to other people and focusing on their stuff. So it's a very call-based, very problem-oriented, solution-oriented kind of conversations.
But you take calls on it?
Take calls, lots of calls.
So he gets angry at calls because people are so stupid.
No. He when
That's
he left his own...
That's always been his thing.
Yeah, he gets a little bit of that still, but he's actually pretty compassionate to people.
Really?
Yeah. Mike would actually get more upset with the callers. Mike Cather would when we were doing it on K-Rock.
Well, I think that was just everybody was burnt out.
That may be.
Yeah.
That may be.
So let's get back to, why, Amber, do you move around so much?
I didn't move around that much. I was
from
in New York.
To New York to L.A.?
Yeah, but I was New York for 7 years, L.A. for 10.
Oh, okay.
That's pretty normal,
Here I just saw you were in different parts. It said you were moving to Astoria, Queens, like it was moving back to New York or something.
Oh,
room in Astoria, Queens. Why would you note that?
Well, I moved to Queens, which is in New York. Queens is in New York.
Moving from Manhattan to Queens is a big deal?
No, I moved from Colorado to Queens. He's reading my book backwards.
No, I know where Queens is. I just thought you had already lived in New York.
No, I moved from Colorado to Astoria, to Brooklyn, to L.A.
And are these all your pictures in this?
Yeah, I drew
all of those pictures.
They're fun.
All the stick figures.
Cool.
Yeah.
They're very cool.
Thank you.
So you went there not to be a stand-up?
No, I started doing stand-up 2 years after. I think I wanted to be a comedic actress, but I didn't tell anybody. And I had a business degree, and so I sort of, I was like, I'm just going to go to New York because there's a lot of opportunities. But I was really, I don't know why I was afraid to admit that I wanted to be a comedic actress because I had never done any acting in my entire life. But then I sort of, I was working at a bunch of dot-coms because it was 1999 and there were tons of jobs. It was like it was booming. There were so many jobs for college graduates. So I found work pretty easily. And then I started drinking a lot, and I sort of fell into the comedy scene, and I became obsessed with stand-up, and I would go to shows every single night, and then eventually I started doing it.
In the Village?
Pretty much everywhere. I really liked the alternative scene, but there was a show, Luna Lounge, called Eating It, every Monday night.
On that the Lower East Side?
Yeah,
I went there.
On Ludlow Street.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was my favorite show, and you know, like Marc Maron and Janine Garofalo.
Yeah, Janine lives there.
Yeah. So I
became
obsessed
with
it.
That's south of Houston, right down by where what was that club? The Living Room.
Yeah.
That's where,
and there was a grilled cheese place.
Yeah. Oh my God, I was down there then. I lived in New York when Bush won the election. I was living in New York.
Which election?
Second
first one? Which 2000, Bush first election?
2000.
I was there that night. Jesus. I went to sleep. I remember I lived at 1st and 6th Avenue.
Just right by, you would have been in the middle of World Trade Center mess.
I know, I would have, but I moved back. Yeah. But I was living there, and I went to sleep, and Gore had won Florida, and James Carville had said, whoever wins Florida is going to win the election. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning. I went to sleep with Al Gore was my president. Yeah. I woke up the next day, and all hell had broken loose. Were you living there then? You must have been there.
Yeah, I think I was in Brooklyn then. Were you still, how long have you been sober?
20 years this year, 20 years and a couple months.
Okay.
How about you?
8 years. Just celebrated 8 in March.
Where did you get sober here then?
Yeah, I got sober. I tried in New York, but I couldn't do it. I wasn't ready. And I think I got about 6 months dry.
Oh, wow. Oh, going to meetings or no?
No, I went to one. It freaked me out. I was like, I'm not going to do this. And then I quit comedy. I quit everything. I would just go to work and go home. But
you
I
quit
didn't
comedy and you quit drinking?
Well, for the 6 months I had dry. And then I started drinking again, moved to LA, drank for another 2 years. And then I quit and then got on the program.
Okay.
What's this
cartoon? Hello, I'm a woman. Wait. I'm looking for a woman who will pay half the rent and also have sex with me.
Oh.
Was that your Craigslist post?
That was my first roommate in Astoria, Queens. I found him in the Loot magazine. He was this guy from Columbia, and he had a nice two-bedroom in Astoria. And he was like, yeah, I've interviewed 30 people, and you're my favorite. And I was like, great, I'll take the room. Like, I was like 21, really stupid. I was like, I'll take the room. And then he just, nothing bad happened, thank God, but he ended up
assaulting.
That's a love letter in Spanish that he wrote to me.
Oh my gosh.
We don't know what you're looking at. It's pictures from my book. My book is sort of like Diary of a Wimpy Kid, but for adults. So on each page there's an illustration. So that's what we're referencing. But
is that what you wanted to talk about today? Was the book, or was there other things?
No, I just wanted to bring it.
Thank you.
No, I don't care what we talk about.
Okay. I just wonder if you had other stuff you wanted to get into.
No.
We're sort of still, the Prince thing is still on my mind because it's so disturbing. The way he died and the implications of it all in terms of how addicts are treated and stuff, and how dependency is treated, and the chronic pain thing and the overuse of opiates.
You got to go out there and fight the good fight.
I'm out there. Listen, I got four this morning and then did 20 hits.
This is going to tarnish our industry as if it's not tarnished enough.
Bob, forget
this guy's
tarnished.
An expert about addiction.
I know. I was happy. I thought to myself, I'm so grateful I'm not deep in it now. I'm not in the field. You know, I'm not running a program right now because I wouldn't want to be a part of it. I wouldn't anything that's... That's an expert. You know,
Amber, do you know what came out today? That he was being treated by an addictionologist.
What? Prince. Was it the guy who was writing prescriptions for him?
Well,
I don't know about that. But it was the guy who was going to get him off drugs.
Okay.
Or maybe on Suboxone and keep him on Suboxone. Who the hell knows? Remember Bruce, when Dr. Bruce, have you aired the Dr. Bruce episode yet? That's coming up. He convinced us that Suboxone was a reasonable treatment for an untreatable opioid addict on with chronic pain. So somebody,
that's what Prince was, supposedly.
Well, you could argue, but I would argue that if you could get him off opiates, you'd find out if he was an addict or not. He'd either stop and be weird again, mm-hmm. or he would continue to pursue it. You know
so
what I mean?
Wait, what happened? What did they determine? That
the guy who found him dead was the son of an addictionologist doctor from California.
Oh,
who's to me, I don't care what you say, that's a sober companion, Drew. I deal with that stuff all the time.
But is addictionologist actually a word?
It's an actual
I'm
word.
An addictionologist.
Drew's an addictionologist. Yeah.
That's a cool word.
Isn't it a good one?
Addictionologist.
But if this guy is, this cornfield guy is it, then we're all screwed.
Yeah. It's just all the opiate replacement stuff, you know, pain, pain, pain. And I'll never forget, I was at, we were required by the state of California, we are required to take a certain amount of pain management hours of continuing medical education, and it's all about how to prescribe opiates. I mean, it's all it's ever been. And I'll never forget the first one I went to was hugely attended because we all had to go, all the physicians had to go. And if a pain management psychiatrist doctor gets up there and goes, well, pain, you know, chronic pain patients are a special population. Interesting thing about them, 97% of them are severe trauma survivors. Anyway, let's talk about methadone. It was like, what?
Oh,
you can just skip over that? And they don't even go at the underlying mechanism, which is the somatic preoccupations that grow out of trauma.
When you're giving the pain scale, when you're asking a patient a pain scale, I've seen it, but I can't remember. And you've got to at least give them some sort of idea of what 10 is in relation
worst
to pain.
Pain
right?
Worst pain you've felt in your
life. It's that face.
Yeah, no, that's the scale that we use, the nursing uses to sort of document the level of pain.
I love that face.
Oh, the facial expressions?
The 10 face.
Remember,
yeah.
Now, we like, live in the one? Time of patient satisfaction surveys. Doctors' jobs are dependent on patient satisfaction. What percentage of our patients were satisfied when they were in the middle of our treatment? Zero?
None.
Yeah, right.
Well, I have this question. I was saying, we were talking about this right before the break, or before we came on here, which is that on this website I'm on, the Addict's Mom, which has 70,000 women
about
on
that.
It.
Yeah.
Women, it's people talking about their children being homeless and lost and addicted.
Terrible.
And it's all heroin and opioids. And they are praying, they ask people to pray that their kid will get arrested.
Oh, I absolutely.
Because they cannot get them
but
into
they're not
rehab.
Going to be
they
arrested.
They can't find a bed for them. They can't find, but some of them get arrested and they're like a hallelujahing.
I understand why the parents don't have the kid arrested. Call the cops.
The
and go.
Cops don't arrest people anymore. Mm. I'm telling you.
It's really hard.
We have a movement of anti-incarceration that's starting in California
this
for
is
sure.
Exactly what we're just talking about is that everyone is talking about mass incarceration and how to reduce it. And the first thing people talk about is decriminalizing drugs.
Yeah.
And my husband was saying that to me. That's what we need to do. And I said, well, in some sense, I agree with you, but I'm telling you, these women are in so much pain, and they're begging for their kids to get arrested because they can't afford.
You want a simple Trump solution? You want a simple Trump
Kill
solution?
Them. Send them to Mexico.
Because everybody likes simple shit these days, and I heard it. At first, I was like, that's never going to happen, but convert the prison system in California into drug treatment, since 70% of those incarcerated are drug addicts or alcoholics.
You know why that wouldn't happen?
Convert it and have you be sentenced to drug treatment for 2 years or whatever it is. I guarantee you to have a more positive effect
than
sentencing them to prison or having them go in and out of drug treatment for 30 or 60 days.
I agree with you, Bob. However, the actual cost of delivering that kind of service would be 5 to 10 times what we're spending on prisons right now.
So it's all about money.
Well, there's...
Donald's going to build a wall for $10 billion, and the Mexicans...
So
we'll get the Mexicans to pay for it.
You and I know the treatment of drug... The abstinence-based treatment of drug addicts requires inspired, highly trained, highly motivated people, and there's just not enough of them around. You can't pay them to do it. That's why 12-step is so important, because unpaid professionals need to sit on the patient for the first few months of their disease, of their recovery. And you can't have a professional do that. You need people who've been where they've been and understand what's going on and just sit on them.
But there's a lot of people working in for-profit rehabs that aren't really crazy about the recovery industry in general. You change the judicial system and the way people are sentenced and what they're sentenced to, those people would migrate away from greedy, profiteering rehab centers to go work with the population.
Maybe.
I think they really would.
Yeah, maybe.
I think you could get good people to work in the treatment centers. Because every day I talk to treatment professionals who don't like where they work.
Yep.
They don't like that money is over mission.
Yep.
They, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so I think there's a way for us to solve this problem in a really intelligent adult way, but it'll never happen because we don't do anything really intelligent and really adult-like in this country at all. And you know that, Drew.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I think people still don't view drug addiction as a disease.
Right.
they still think it's a lack of character.
Why do they think all those people are in prison?
They think they have a lack of character.
Yeah. Well, they certainly behave as though they did when they're in their disease. And that's the problem. People don't see the recoveries. They only see people when they're misbehaving in their condition. They don't understand what the person was before or what they could be later.
You know, Amber mentioned something that's critical because I deal with addicts that do get a chance of getting sober. You know I do, Shannon.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yes, I do.
And at the 6-month point, jobs are crucial to the next step of the ladder. And you said in 1999, there was nothing but jobs. I remember that too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I went from dishwasher to prep cook to messenger for a movie company to program director of a rehab center in about 4 years, going to school and working. There's not pathways to success like that for young people anymore. And I think that's another reason why young people are so prone to this hopelessness and this kind of, you know, because you said you're a college graduate and there's all these jobs. There's a lot of college graduate kids that I counsel. There's no jobs. You know what I mean? We need to think about that too. And the Trumpinator, that's what I choose to call him. The Trumpinator is going to take care of that too. Because he's going to bring all those jobs from China back to America.
It'd be great if somebody did.
Well, honestly, I mean, no one.
You're not laughing at my Trumpinator joke, Sharon, at all.
Well, I'm so disturbed by the destruction of our republic that it's hard for me to laugh. I'm really afraid. I actually live in fear now because I feel
Drew has a feeling he's a liberal just playing the card. We want to talk about that?
Well, we hope that would be a nice fantasy.
I think he's such a pragmatist. He will do. I was talking about this on the radio today. It's like, when did the term pivot become a word of admiration? We used to call that lying. We used to call that being a politician. It's like, we'll see where he pivots. It's like, well, what was he telling us before? And by the way, the pivoting is not unique to him. It's all these politicians.
Oh, but I think he's going to pivot left of Hillary.
I agree. I think he's gonna go
on what?
I think he's gonna pardon all the immigrants.
All in action. Don't be scared. It's all in action.
He was gonna say, he literally said out loud that women who had abortions should go to jail.
He wanted to get elected.
Until he got the Republican nomination.
That's the base of the Republican Party. That's what they believe.
Yeah.
You can't say that out loud. You really can't come back from it.
No, what he said was, he got tricked in a little bit. I'm not an apologist for Trump, trust me. But what he said was is that they should be punished in places where it's illegal.
But not the men.
Well, wait a minute. But where it's illegal, what happens to women that have abortions? They get punished. That's what happens. It's legal, and when you break the law, you get a punishment. And that's what he was talking about. He was saying it should be illegal.
The doctors and nurses get punished. The people who perform it get punished.
Not really. They get shot.
They get what?
They get shot. But listen. So I agree with you. It's going to be a pivot, and who knows what? I think it's going to pardon all the immigrants. And then say, okay, you're all in here? We're all on board? Okay, now build the wall. Something crazy like that.
The creepy thing is that he loves Putin.
He loves
and
himself.
And Putin loves him. That's even creepier.
There's a lot of creepy stuff going on Putin-wise.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there's Wendy Deng in the middle of all of
What's
that?
What is that? You know,
Miss X, Mrs. Murdoch is now Putin's mistress.
Oh, is she really? What? Murdoch's ex-wife?
Yeah.
What?
Oh yeah. My God!
This is, my husband is fascinated.
He's kidding.
Like, he wants to do a film about.
Is that true?
How do you find out?
This is what everyone has been talking about. That she's been on. Putin's best friend is, I forget his name. His yacht is always parked near Putin, so they're always together.
Wow.
And Wendy was staying on the yacht, and everyone's. Putin was always there, and people began to speculate what was going
on with
Wendy.
Let's study Wendy Murdoch's psychopathology for a second. She comes from the hinterlands of China, gets educated, becomes an executive media person, meets Murdoch, marries him.
She was working on the fucking factory line when she met him. She was the translator.
Oh, my God.
She's got the magic pussy.
Now you get to say cock and pussy in the same podcast.
I finally did it.
She must have the magic.
And then
Murdoch goes and marries Jerry Hall, Mick Jagger's ex-wife.
Yeah. She marries Murdoch.
It's such a weird world.
These are the people that most Americans admire and look up to. These are not people to admire or look up to in any way.
We were talking about cults a few minutes ago. I'm within inches of you convincing me that the Illuminati exists. And you know, you're talking about them.
I have a really good Illuminati story. Just to do a really quick one, that I was doing a Drake video. It's the only video I've done in 20 years for Hold On. We were redoing Scarface. All of it in 3 minutes.
Wow.
And the coke scene too?
Of course. And we, I hired the only white guy in the video is the bad guy, of course. And he gets shot in the head. So right before he gets shot in the head, we were shooting a scene in a mansion. And he said, Sharon, I really got to talk to you. I really got to talk to you. It's very important.
Is Drake saying this?
No. Johnny, this actor. And I said, okay.
The white guy.
Yeah, the white guy. And I said, okay, what's going on? And he goes, I was outside and there's a bunch of guys out there. And, they're all saying that Drake is in the Illuminati. Oh. And I'm like, and he's like, is that true? Do you believe in that? And I said, are you, what?
You high?
What are you talking about? Like those guys like who, you know, have the blood of Jesus or something? And he's like, no. It's Beyonce and Jay-Z and Obama.
Oh my God.
And Drake. And I'm like, no, that's not true, John. That's absolutely
just those
not
three.
True, but I was so
and that guy's voting
pleased.
For Trump, I guarantee you.
And
that.
I'm so pleased that the pressure's off the Jews
for a change for the change. Moment.
I was like, oh,
for
God,
the, for the moment,
not, for it's not the Rothschilds.
How did
like,
how did yeah, Arizona. How did it go from the Jews controlling the world to the Catholics? I don't know how that happened Catholics. Over.
Oh, you mean
you know,
in
because
reality.
The Illuminati is the Catholics.
Oh, is that right?
It went from the Jews, you know, for like hundreds of years, it was all this, oh, the Jews are controlling everything behind everybody's back. And then now it's become the Catholics.
No, now it's black people.
Oh, now
they're
black
wealthy.
People.
Yeah, they're very wealthy black people.
That's it? That's an Illuminati?
That's
the Illuminati.
One?
Is that
no,
right?
No, Illuminati is the Catholic
yeah.
thing.
No, go. You just do a little, your little internet research. It's a whole new Illuminati.
Only Illuminati I know is Hansi on Howard Stern's show keeps accusing Howard of being the Illuminati. That's the only real
Illuminati.
Yeah, the Illuminati
comes from the Catholic Church. That's what it comes from.
I don't know. Well, listen, where are we going here? We're wasting our time. If we're going to talk about cults, though, I'd love to talk about... Because you're doing things on cults, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm there. Oh, yes. I'm doing cult things.
What are you doing?
Was there sex involved in the cult?
There's always sex involved.
There's
in
always
the cult.
One
Bob,
male leader.
Yeah, the
leader. No, it was a female leader of
no,
this
one. No, in this particular cult, the Church Universal and Triumphant, which was led by Elizabeth Clare Prophet, who's being played by Annette Bening.
The Church Universal and what?
Triumphant.
Triumphant, I like that.
And she was very young when she married Mark Prophet, who was the head of the church. He was 30 years older than her, and they had 4 children. Mm-hmm. And she never had an orgasm. I happen to know this because it's in the book. And
did she talk about that, or did she talk about that with her
she
kids?
She talked about that with her kids. And what happened was that no one in the church, their sex life was very restricted. They were only allowed to have sex once a month. If you were in the church, but Mark Prophet had to have sex every single night because otherwise his chakras would get blocked. So
of course
Elizabeth was like, I don't want to fuck you every night anymore. It's not funny for me. And so he's like, well, what you need is to relax and get in the mood. So they formed Elizabeth's idea was to form a group called The Cube. And the Cube was 4 of their followers who lived out in the barn. And they were, interestingly, all handsome young men who would give her massages. And the massages would then relax her, ostensibly, and make her ready to have sex with the prophet and a prophet. He's both the prophet and a prophet. So one of the guys, and in my fantasy it would be all 4, but so far we only have proof of 1, the massages led to a happy ending, which was her first happy ending. and about 2 months after the happy ending started, Mark Prophet had a stroke and died.
Oh.
And she, within 3 days, said to... They had never had intercourse. They were only just doing like
massages,
hand jobs, and massages. Sorry, and then that's what I meant. And so she said, you know, I'm ready. Let's do it. And he's like, we can't. You know, it's against the rules. we can only, you know, do this massage thing because we're not married. And she's like, no, we can get married, no problem. I will. She was a channeler. She could channel the, you know, different
gods,
many, the great white brotherhood. So she channeled Mother Mary and performed the marriage ceremony. At one point I said to Annette, you get to actually play Elizabeth Clare Prophet, and then you marry yourself to yourself.
Wow.
To him. And she's like, that's going to be
amazing. She's either schizophrenic or bipolar.
She was an epileptic.
And 200,000 people devoutly believed this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now, what was the epilepsy? What do you mean? What was she doing?
She was.
A lot of these people have fictitious seizures, people like that.
She had frontal lobe epilepsy from the time she was 9.
Meaning what?
She had, you know, tonic-clonic seizures.
She had generalized seizures.
She had major. She had seizures as a child. Mm-hmm. She somehow managed to control them for 30 years, and people, like, she would go and look like she was kind of spacing out.
Right,
and seizure. people would be like, you know, they'd think she was praying or
right.
communicating or but something.
She was seizing.
And then in her 40s or 50s, she began having very, very serious tonic-clonic seizures again, and they got to the point where they wouldn't stop, and she finally had to get a medical intervention because she refused.
Dilantin, it's called.
She got Dilantin, and the Dilantin, when she was on Dilantin, she said, "I feel like I'm wearing a lead cap. I can't communicate. I can't touch God." And that is the point where she moved the church to Montana. They bought a giant piece of property next to Yellowstone National Park and built the world's largest bomb shelter.
Oh, my God. And that's still there?
It is.
Have you visited?
I am not. You can't get in unless you're a church follower.
So the church still
there?
Still exists?
They're still going?
Yep, some of them.
Oh my God.
But ironic, but strangely,
what are they
going
to think of this movie, this TV show?
Well, all of the prophets are all the prophet children are out of the church.
I see.
And
wait a minute. So the people that would know don't follow my mom. The other people just said, "No, fuck
dead.
You. We're following your mother."
She got early. She was the oldest woman to ever have a child in Montana. She had a baby at 55.
Wow.
And then she got early onset Alzheimer's at 60, and she died at like 64.
Jesus. 4 years she deteriorated.
Yeah,
fast.
Very fast. I'm sure it was happening. Far
yeah,
earlier.
Yeah.
Well, this is going to be a great show. I'm going to watch it
yes.
on Netflix.
Yeah. It'll never be on Netflix.
It won't.
Where is it
going to
be?
It's
Showtime.
Yeah.
What's it called again?
It's called Universal and Triumphant.
How do you, but no, I just mean binge watch. However you can binge watch something.
You can, yeah.
Showtime.
You can record it. Showtime, standby, flyby,
you
up.
You can come to the screening.
that or just record it, put
can,
it
like,
on DVR.
It on
DVR and then you watch
oh, right.
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
which,
as long as for the 3 days of recording.
This brings me to a really interesting question.
Yeah.
Sean Prophet, who's the son, who was the business leader of the church, is now an adamant atheist, and he runs an atheist website, and he believes that 12-step programs are the biggest cult of all.
Well, there are people.
They are, but they're benign cults with no leadership and no money involved and very little sex.
Yeah. That's
according, according to Amber, very little sex.
Yeah, it's
first year a lot of sex, then after that.
Cults essentially always have leaders, right? And there's,
yeah, yes. like one, yeah, one leader.
And they carefully kept that out of the program. And I understand that there's a really not. It's not cults. Not the
it's
right
not
word.
It's profit.
For.
There's not profit,
and
there's
you can
not
do
people.
It. You, there's no.
There's
if you
definition.
Say I'm leaving, they'd be like, "Good luck to you."
All right, look up the.
They don't disconnect you.
There's no coercion involved.
Yeah.
In
look up the definition
but there are
of cult, and it fits it. There's an unquestionable authority, which is Bill Wilson, and the Bible, which is the 12-step Alcoholics Anonymous.
The book.
There is faithful followers that don't. Will not accept new information about the subject, right? So yeah. We know in science a lot more now about addiction than Bill Wilson did in 1936.
Right.
Yet what he says goes, and what science says doesn't matter.
Yeah,
that
but
unquestioning,
did he say, but
unquestioning authority.
I think it's more like a social. What is the word?
What's wrong with it being a benign cult?
Because it's not quite right. In the atheist piece, I know atheists get very objectionable to the God language. Mm-hmm. And maybe they ought to, you know, certainly there are organizations that modify that.
There is a chapter in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous called To the Wives that is the most misogynist, ridiculous chapter.
Yeah, but written in the 30s by men. So,
see, you're doing it now. You're in the cult, Amber. You know it should be removed from the text.
I am not in the cult.
It should be removed.
You know, they're talking about revising the Big Book. Did you hear about that?
The first 164 pages?
Yeah.
Hopefully.
To like plain language for younger people, they're talking about
they
it.
They need to do Who's that. They need to remove To the Wives.
That's the point. There's no authority structure, so who is they?
I don't know.
There's general services. That
GSR, the GSR.
They were going to do it in 99, I think it was the GSR in Silver Lake, and I wanted To the Wives out because I'm antisocial and I think it's ridiculous. And they were like, well, that's not what the new edition is going to be about. It's going to be about new modern stories. And I said, who fucking reads the stories? Nobody does. The Eskimos and the old people. You know what I mean?
It's the
first 164 pages that are the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous.
I like the stories.
No, I get real passionate about it. I think AA is going to die unless it modernizes. I think something new will be replaced, and I'll bet you what replaces it is a cult that has a leader.
Oh, boy, that's not bad.
You know what I'm saying?
No, don't
that's
do that.
Bad.
That no.
That's what's going to happen if AA doesn't modernize, because young people do not like AA. Contrary to what you've been told, young people would rather go anywhere but AA, and it's not just alcoholic resistance or whatever. It doesn't fit modern times. The language is too outdated. The over-religiosity is too much. 20-year-old kids just look at it like, this is like really fucking weird, Bob. Not like me, a Catholic boy raised. I know what it is. I know what they're talking about here. I don't like it, but I know what they're talking about. 20-year-olds do not even know what they're fucking talking about.
But people who need it find their way into it.
Yeah.
And they find their way.
Not the way they should, because there are millions of Americans are not finding a solution to alcoholism because Alcoholics Anonymous refuses to change.
But you should know there's a lot of increasing science that shows it's effective. This business about it being ineffective is false.
That's all lies. It's not. There's no way to measure AA's effectiveness because all people lie. Especially when they're talking about, you know, some of the worst people I know are long-term sober people. Just terrible people.
That's a different issue.
But they present as really healthy and really well. Because you get to talk and say how well you're doing. But what's going on really? Because I'm the one they come to when and tell me what's going on really.
Well, but you know,
I go to meetings all the time and there's people talking about what's going on really.
Yeah, and
I've had a different experience with meetings and people. I agree with you that they do need to modernize, but I also think you know, it's ineffective. Like, how do they gain that data? Like, if you tried one meeting, it doesn't work. Like,
no, he's saying that they did that data and it works magically on the brain.
I'm saying there's good data that suggests it works and works well.
But he's saying that there's. Yeah. I'm talking about the data that says it works and works well. I'm saying those people that were analyzed lie.
But all addicts lie.
So all human beings lie.
No, but listen, so all addiction research is colored by those issues, and so interestingly the 12-step research is actually more honest and more stringent than most of the stuff done.
I can
on
just tell you that the most popular way to market a rehab is to say you don't do 12-step.
I understand that, but that's,
and that's because it doesn't appeal to young people who make up 70%.
I think it's because of these people who don't want to admit they're alcoholics.
I agree with
no,
that.
It's
that's been my experience.
I'm the only one that just worked in two rehabs today.
Well, but you're
they're
dealing
all 20-year-old kids.
But they're just in rehab. Those are the people who aren't going to admit they're alcoholics.
They're 20-year-old kids that will admit they're alcoholic, but they're not going to seek a solution through God promising them to have their personality defects removed. They're more psych savvy
to
know that
say
character defects being removed by Jesus is a little ludicrous in the 21st century.
But Bob,
it truly
but
is.
But I don't think that, and I've done the 12
so,
steps
but that's
many
what
times,
the program says.
But I don't think Jesus removed.
What God removes your character defects? Which one?
The one that I understand. The one that I...
Removes your character defects?
It's not removes it. It's sort of...
That's what the book says.
You become aware and then you slowly change.
This is my passion. The book says you get on your knees after meditating for an hour and you ask God to remove your character flaws. That's insanity.
No, how about
I don't take it so literal.
Yeah, let me say you wish,
but that's what it says.
Bob, you wish hard to be able to work diligently towards removing your character defect. How about that?
It says
I do this thing where, like, I have jealousy or manipulation. I'm aware of it. I write about it. I'm like, universe, not like Jesus, like this energy, please, you know,
help me with
this. And so when it pops up, I'm like, oh, there it is. And I make a different choice.
It's just staying outside of your head.
It's sort of like being aware. Yeah.
Now you're getting into pop psychology, which is fine. That's not AA. AA says you pray to a monotheistic God that removes your character defects.
Well, I have people extremely close to me in my
life. I know you
who could not have been more vehement in this expression that they could not
have I spoken speak to them God. Before
yes, you might have spoken to them. They could not speak to God. This whole thing was so offensive. This big book was such bullshit. 2 years down the line, it is you know, with a when the first step has truly been gone through, then there is I recently asked this member of my family, do you think a person can get sober without a 12-step program? And she said, probably, but why would you even try?
And Bob, I would argue that... We're mincing words and language, and maybe the language does need to be modernized and adjusted. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you that turns people off with the language, particularly the God-like language, and that there's something that you and I have talked about that we call like full recovery, which needs therapy, needs professional help later for many people. That after a year or two or three of just
and that gets
sobriety.
Into the mixed bag that AA is. There are some who will seek outside help. I have for decades.
Yeah,
right. I think I'm better than I was. I certainly am not going to become an AA guru and get a bunch of people to bow down
but
to
Bob,
me and talk about
Bob,
how great I am.
What do
but
we...
there are a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous, particularly in Southern California, who get off on that, who use that power.
Well.
And so it's a mixed bag
of
who's in AA.
That's the problem of people being together anywhere.
I mean, I think that's going to happen you create a new program, there's going to be assholes in that program.
So other disease in America do doctors, the judicial system, psychiatrists, psychologists, DCSF, all systems tell you to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, right, for a judicial problem, a child custody problem, a medical problem. They all tell you to go to a program that says, you know what, pray to God.
Okay, well,
does cancer do that?
But define,
does diabetes do that? Any other diseases say go to alcohol program like that?
Yes, there's a lot of that now.
Now?
A lot of mindfulness and prayer and all kind of stuff in any disease management.
Yes. Mindfulness is now the thing. But I have a question that is really on my mind, which is if addiction is a biological condition, then why do you, the first thing you say is what's your trauma?
Because that's a second component. It's so genetics and then childhood trauma.
Triggering.
Then exposure.
The way to think about it is people like, okay, once the disease is active, you have this drive system that's abnormal and you progress and you can't stop.
Right.
Why did you pick up the drink in the first place? You picked it up in the first place because you couldn't regulate your emotions. Well, why were you unregulated? You exited the frame of intersubjective exchange, which is the landscape within which humans build emotional regulation. And you exit it and you do not go back. And the 12-step pulls you back into that frame. So you rebuild the connection with other people. And that connection is not super, super deep because you need a professional to make it very, very deep. But it's enough to begin to build trust, closeness.
And that's what AA is.
Yeah.
And that's the magicalness of AA.
All
not
right.
The steps, it's that.
I see Susan agitated, pacing around here. Email us. Email
Read
us
it all.
At drdrew.com. If you want to ask questions on the show, we will pick up your emails there. Again, that is.
I want to get some emails from some 20-year-old drug addicts and their opinion of Alcoholics Anonymous.
That's a good
please.
Idea. Yeah, doctor.com/email.
Email me too.
And also,
ambertozer@gmail.com.
Please, wow.
But no sex.
Please join our email list and support also the Dr. Drew podcast and the This Life podcast by clicking on the Amazon banner on our websites, both the website, the Dr. Drew podcast, drdrew.com, and on thislifepodcast.com. The Amazon banner does not cost you a thing, but it helps keep wins in the sales, so we're able to keep this thing going. We can also be found on Twitter at This Life Podcast and also at Dr. Drew. Please follow us there. If you like the show, please tell us, and please tell a friend. You know, it really helps keep us going. It's a word of mouth. That's how this thing really gets going. And also check it out on iTunes. Bob Forrest, I look forward to bringing more celebrities and experts to talk about This Life. And don't forget to check out the Adam and Dr. Drew podcast, which is sort of a caller-focused new version of the Adam and Drew podcast, which is 5 days a week. And also I have the Dr. Drew podcast.
That is the longest thing you've ever read.
I didn't read. I was just saying off the top of my head. What are you talking about?
It was all handwritten, too. I'm very
impressed.
It
was our producer, our crack producer, gives me what I need.
Yeah, see, what you need.
My wife knows what I need.
Let's just wrap this up. What I want to say is I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm in it, but I can criticize it. And it needs to be modified, maybe. It needs people from within to say, hey, it's not working. Bill Wilson's final papers he wrote in the late 60s and early 70s are about this very subject. That unless AA modernizes, unless AA is welcoming to the new generation of alcoholics, it will die.
But that's true of all institutions.
To come from within.
I totally agree.
And
that
everybody's scared to criticize
except
it.
Except the American Constitution.
That's a cult. That's a cult.
No, I.
If you're scared to criticize it, that's a cult.
I'm not scared to criticize it. I'm scared that if we're like it's nobody. No, Jesus has to remove your character defects. Like somebody's listening to it, it's going to be like, well, I'm not going to.
Yeah.
You know, that's, my biggest fear is that it might turn somebody off right now in this moment.
Yeah, no, and I agree with Amber. You're wanting to change the.
I think this turns more people on. I see exactly the opposite. Well, here's young the people. Okay, when you talk to them.
Hey, anybody listening, Amber, anybody listening that is
you're not the boss.
Anybody listening that is turned off by what Bob is saying and who is contemplative of
listen to Amber.
It was going to the program. Send us an email. And we will read it. And we will address it here on the podcast.
Right. Yes, okay? We will.
All right. Well, Amber, is that sufficiently gratifying your codependency?
Yes.
All right. We love our listeners. We love this podcast. We love our producer who makes this possible. Sharon, thank you for being two with us. We appreciate
it.
Amber,
fun.
Thanks for joining
thank
us.
Thank you for having me.
Love the Madonna stories and stuff. It was awesome. And also, we can't wait to see the Showtime series, which is called again?
Universal and Triumphant.
There you go. We'll see you next time.
Yeah.
Peace out.
Bye.
Bye.
Everything that comes out your mouth is gold. We were walking, talking about houses of hopeless. We were homeless. Thank you. We were sleeping, slipping. We were sleeping, slipping.